You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Elizabeth Cobbs is a documentary filmmaker and a historian. Her latest book, The Hamilton Affair, has already received raves from fellow historians like Joseph Ellis, which is all the more notable because it's a novel. WNYC's own Kurt Anderson says it's been more than 200 years since Alexander Hamilton was as celebrated as he is right now. What a stroke of luck that an actual award-winning historian has come along just now with such a richly detailed and entertaining novel about the most freshly fabulous American founder. One of Professor Cobb's previous novels, Broken Promises, was about the Civil War, and that won the San Diego Book Award. I'm very happy to welcome Elizabeth Cobb to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
And had you ever considered or tried writing a nonfiction book about Alexander Hamilton and Elizabeth Schuyler?
No, because I felt that really had been done. We have wonderful biographies, of
Ron
course.
Chernow, especially.
Ron Chernow's, obviously, and there are many others. I mean, that are, you know, a lot of good sources. But I love to write fiction because, in addition to the nonfiction I write, I feel that fiction gives us a chance to walk in those shoes.
And also, there are big gaps in the historical record, which you can fill in.
Absolutely. So the novel concerns both Hamilton, Alexander, but also his wife, Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton. And with Alexander Hamilton, it's like having a puzzle, a jigsaw puzzle, which has tons of extra pieces. And with Eliza Schuyler, it's like having a jigsaw puzzle where two-thirds of the pieces are missing. And so it's great fun to really figure out how to create a portrait that's meaningful.
There was a lot of correspondence, but most of it's missing?
Well, actually, tons of correspondence. I mean, this is the extra jigsaw puzzles. Alexander Hamilton was the most prolific writer of the Revolutionary era. And so we have all his incredibly tender, beautiful love letters from him to her, but not a single letter from her to him. And so...
Do we know why they're gone? Because... She probably wrote to him.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Although he would chide her, he'd say, I've written 10 letters to your one, my darling, my life, my beautiful Betsy. You must write me more. So she did write him. But it was fairly customary in that era for women to kind of step out of the limelight of their husband and destroy their letters. Martha Washington destroyed her letters, although she also destroyed her husband's love letters. Mm. You know, they wanted to be people to be remembered as public figures, you know, not as lovers.
How far along were you in writing this when a certain musical appeared off Broadway?
And what musical would that be?
Have you seen it?
No, I'm just so envious of everyone who has, which seems like half of America. Of course, that's not true. I was deep into it. I had started the novel about 5 years ago. And I started it partly because a fellow historian said, hey, you know, for your next novel, why don't you do something on Alexander Hamilton? Nobody's done anything on him. And so I was well along, and I had traveled to his birthplace in Nevis, which is in the Caribbean, and where he grew up in St. Croix. And I had been up to the home of Eliza Schuyler in upstate New York and Albany and Saratoga. So I'd done a lot of research. And then a friend said to me, gosh, you know, have you seen YouTube? There's this kind of cool, you know, White House performance and a guy's talking about Hamilton. And so I saw it and, of course, was thrilled and delighted and charmed and frightened.
What was the reaction of publishers when your agent first shopped the book around?
Oh, it was the usual thing. I would even get from my friends, I'd say, I'm writing a book on the sexiest man in the American Revolution. And then everyone would get this really blank, blank look on their face. And so
I would have thought Jefferson.
Oh, no, don't even get me going on Jefferson. Or maybe we will later. But
you did say the word sex because I usually associate him with. Well, of course, there's a lot of sex in this story.
Oh, yes, there is. and that's, you know, that's certainly a big part of the story.
What had you thought of Alexander Hamilton before you started to tackle it?
Well, that's one reason why it was so curious to me, because as a historian, I'm a trained professional historian. I got my PhD at Stanford, and I had taught Alexander Hamilton the way he had been taught to me for, you know, when I went to school, which is that he is in some ways always the antagonist of the story, not the hero, not the protagonist. And so when I was first doing it, my husband's a filmmaker, Jim Shelley, and he said, you know, every good movie, you need a bad villain. And so I thought, well, this is great. I'll write about the villain. You know, that's Alexander Hamilton. And so what I learned in the course of the research is that, in fact, it was almost the opposite, that the way he'd been painted was due partly to the fact that he had died, you know, 20 years before all of his rivals, and they kept talking about him.
Well, in the musical, Aaron Burr is the villain. And did you know that Aaron Burr lived right downstairs from our studios here? Because this was the unofficial vice presidential residence.
Oh, my gosh. I did not know that. I'm sitting on top of...
First John Adams, and then Aaron Burr lived right on the corner of Varick and Charlton.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that fabulous? And that's the lovely thing about New York, is you know, around every block is a story just like that.
So do you think that he's been misunderstood because he was maligned by all the rivals?
I think so. You have to understand, Alexander Hamilton comes from the Caribbean. He's an outsider. Of the founders, the prominent founders, he's the only immigrant. He's also the only man who makes his living with his own hands and head. All the others have inherited wealth, even if it's modest wealth.
But he married wealth.
He did, but he never accepted a penny from her family. And that's the other thing. People said, oh, well, gosh, you know, he married this woman for her money, and he never took any of her family's money. So, in fact, Talleyrand, the great foreign minister of Napoleon Bonaparte, said, in my day, I've known Napoleon Bonaparte, Pitt of England, who was the great prime minister, and Alexander Hamilton. And the most impressive was Hamilton. And also the only man who I saw working for his living while creating this marvelous government.
But he did have a certain elitist attitudes, despite the fact that he was an outsider, that sometimes give us pause. Was that just because he was a man of his time?
I think that that's part of the bum rap. But I also think you have to imagine this again. Here's a boy who had no shoes. I mean, here's a boy whose mother dies, and he's considered illegitimate because she had been thrown into jail for fleeing her first husband, who was abusive, and so thereby forbidden ever to marry again. And so his father was her, in a way, second husband, but a common-law husband. And so he was the person who, you know, think of this. If you were trying to get ahead, you would try to dress better. You would speak in a more elevated way, perhaps, than the guy who can slouch around because he owns 5,000 acres and, you know, 5,000 slaves, someone like Thomas Jefferson. So I don't think he was a monarchist or an elitist in the way that we tend to think of him. I think he was a person who was just very careful about his dress and who wanted to rise.
He is the only person who they made exceptions on all sorts of rules in the Constitution so that he could be president.
Well, they say that that's the reason why if you were a foreign birth up until that point, you could still be president, and that might have been for Hamilton. But he was also a great setter of rules. I mean, and a follower of rules, which I think is very interesting when you think about the Hamilton affair.
We'll come to that in just a second. My guest is Elizabeth Cobbs, who holds the Melbourne G. Glasscop Chair in American History at Texas A&M University. She is the author of 4 books on American history, a winner of the Allen Nevins Prize. She's written novels and also nonfiction books. And I guess you have to decide when you're doing a topic which way to go. Is one harder to do than the other?
History in some ways is harder. It takes longer. You have to be so precise in your footnoting, and there's just a lot of grinding, but it's wonderful. Fiction, however, you get to make stuff up, so that's great.
But you relied on the sources of the time. How reliable was the reporting at the time on the affair at the center of this book?
Well, our best reporter is Alexander Hamilton.
He gave us this 95-page pamphlet. He told us a lot more than he should have.
Yes, and that's the crazy thing about Hamilton. I was talking about him being a rule follower. I mean, when he set out to do something, he did it right, or wrong in this case.
He called it Observations on Certain Documents. That's an odd name to give to a pamphlet that admits to having had a 2-year-long affair with a woman, not his wife.
Yeah, more like a year. Yes, you know, you have to understand, it was all about honor for him. And I realize in today's political climate, we think, whoa, honor, what's that about? But the Declaration of Independence ends with the word honor. We will pledge our sacred honor. And so for him, he overwrites, obviously. And in fact, many people thought he should not write a confession at all. And this is the only time in all of American history where a major political figure is accused of a sex scandal. And he really voluntarily comes forward and says, let me tell you about it.
But we don't know much about how Elizabeth Schuyler reacted to all of this, other than she stayed married to him and had two more children with him.
That's right.
She must have been totally humiliated.
Oh, my gosh. She was 8.5 months pregnant in New York City in July. So a very just physically different, difficult period of time. And it was an extraordinary humiliation for her. And so one of the great mysteries and one of the fun things to plumb for me as a historian is why. Why would a woman stay with this man? And she could have, you know, she could have not done so. And in fact, she fled. She went upstate to her family's home in Albany within a day or so of this news coming out and of him, you know, saying, I'm going to release this pamphlet. And think of this. A woman is 8.5 months pregnant. She goes basically by herself, takes her eldest son, and takes a, you know, 1 to 2 day trip, you know, on a boat up the Hudson to get away from this man. But then ultimately, she loves him, and ultimately she comes back. And so part of the mystery of the book was to figure out, you know, what she did. And of course, part of what she did, and I think this is completely remarkable, is that instead of hiding behind a rock, as you would think a person would do at this moment of supreme humiliation, that's the moment that Eliza Schuyler chose to step into the limelight.
So she was good material for somebody who writes fiction, because we know so much less about her. And you're writing this book in alternate chapters from both Alexander's and Elizabeth's point of view.
That's right. So I get to really explore the heart and mind of both characters going back and forth. You know, why did this affair happen? What was going on with Eliza when this happened? What was going on with Alexander? Why did he fall to temptation?
And since this is a romance, how was it as a history professor to write some of the juicier passages?
Well, this is pretty fun. It's sort of you wonder, are your colleagues going to respect you in the morning if you have show a founding father having sex? But my gosh, this is the sexiest guy in the American Revolution, so you can't do without it.
And your writing style is quite spare. Obviously, that was a stylistic choice.
That's right. I always go back and forth about these things, Leonard. Sometimes I think I should be like the novelists. It's all these, you know, extra furbelows and, you know, detours and, you know, turn the novel upside down, read it, you know, in a mirror. But I love history. I just want people to know that story and be swept away by it.
Isn't your specialty the history of American foreign policy? Hamilton is not you should be writing about Franklin or Jefferson or one of the others.
Yes, but these things all collide and all come together in my fevered brain. The American political system, the party system that killed Alexander Hamilton, arose because of the French Revolution. And Alexander Hamilton was one of the few founders who spoke French as a native language. His mother was French Huguenot. He was a person who cared deeply about what happened to Louis XVI. You know, Thomas Jefferson, who actually personally knew Louis XVI, was like, well, you know, the tree of liberty needs to be watered with tyrants every now and again. And Alexander Hamilton
I'll drink some more Margaux.
2 bottles, please, and I'll ship a case home. So I actually think that foreign relations usually comes, at least it sneaks into everything with me. But I think that's actually a very fun topic.
But you have a reputation as being a kind of a renegade in the field. Are you aware of that?
Yeah.
On the other hand, a fellow history professor, Ben Shulman, who went to Stanford with you, says that you've transformed the field, opening it up to cultural and economic dimensions. Is that somehow similar to your approach to fiction, writing fiction?
Well, I think that in a way it opens new fields. And yes, my friend Bruce Shulman from Boston University, I went to school with, and a very, very wonderful man. And I've always felt like you have to follow the facts where they go. And often That goes against received wisdom about things. My newest, actually I have a film coming out here very shortly on the public television. It's called American Umpire, and it really tries to turn, I think, our understanding of America's role in the world upside down, but in a way I think will really help Americans. In terms of fiction...
And that's all about how the federal government and the states have to work things out?
Well, it's that... if you look at how the role that the United States has played in the larger world since 1945, 1947, there's a tendency in historical scholarship to think of it as an empire, like Empire State with an E. And actually, I don't think that doesn't make a lot of sense to me for a variety of reasons. But I think that the United States really has a relationship that's to the outside world that's more akin to the relationship that it has between the federal government and the states.
That's what I was referring to.
And by the way, it was Alexander Hamilton, as well as James Madison, as well as John Jay, who said that the federal government should be like an umpire to the states.
Although we haven't always been the most objective umpire, we've had a number of unjust wars, like the Mexican War, for example.
Absolutely.
When we went into China, we went there mainly because of economic interest, not because we were trying to balance off the interests of the Chinese and the Europeans. And we can go on and on and on. Have we been the fairest of umpires?
No, and I don't think most umpires, you know, suffer from this problem, right? Half the crowd loves them, and the other half hates them, and they make a lot of mistakes.
Sometimes they call low balls strikes when the batter thinks they're balls.
Oh gosh, yeah, I know, and I've sat through a lot of little league games myself, so believe me, I know that.
Elizabeth Cobbs, her latest book. Are we going to see nonfiction next, or?
Actually, I have my next nonfiction book comes out in April. It's called The Hello Girls, and it's about America's first women soldiers who were recruited personally by John Blackjack Pershing to serve in World War I. So that's my next trick.
But this book is The Hamilton Affair, and it is published by Arcade. And my great thanks to Elizabeth Cobbs for coming by to talk about it. When will The Umpire be on television?
The Umpire is going to be airing, I know it starts airing nationally on September 13th in different markets. It airs at different times. It's sponsored, by the way, by WETA and narrated by Jim Lehrer. So it airs in Washington, D.C. and later in September.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much.